Have you noticed, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sure you have because you are astute, ladies and gentlemen, that in the Christian religion, the emphasis is always on a Christian walk. You must walk a Christian walk. And this is one of the main reasons why people are hesitant to join this religion, thank God, because people instinctively know that they are not living ideal lives and that they are probably going to be judged by those in the Christian religion. And if they're not judged, then the war will be on very soon. The project will be undertaken to reform the behavior of anyone joining their assembly. This is opposed to our evangel. Let me explain this. I'm not saying that Paul did not consider it important to live a good life, but he always placed teaching in front of behavior. We can see this in the book of Romans. Romans, from chapter 1 through chapter 11, is doctrine. And it is refreshing that for 11 chapters, Paul never talks about what kind of person you are. He never talks about whether you are a worthy human being who is doing anything that would please the Lord. In fact, he goes out of his way in chapter 3 to say that there is no one righteous, no, not one. It's not until chapter 12 that Paul starts saying, therefore. I think that's the first word he uses. Let me check this in Romans chapter 12. This is important, so bear with me as I locate this in my trusty scriptures. Here it is. I am entreating you then, brethren, by the pities of God, to present your bodies a sacrifice, living, holy, well-pleasing to God. The key word is then. I have it circled in my scriptures. I am entreating you then. See that? Romans 12. One, I am entreating you then. What does he mean by then? He might as well say therefore. He's referring back to everything he said from chapters 1 through 11. If you have not grasped your justification by faith, if you have not grasped the fact that you are crucified with Christ, or that you now have peace with God, and that Romans 8:1, there is now therefore no condemnation, unless you grasp that, you will go to Romans chapter 12 and say, oh God, here's another preacher who just wants me to behave myself. But Christianity begins their dialogue with you with Romans chapter 12. They begin with housekeeping. They begin with cleaning up your life, with trying to present you. But Paul is saying that we can only present ourselves to God as a sacrifice, living and well-pleasing, if we have embraced and internalized, made real, understood, made a part of our being, that we are completely justified. Otherwise, any type of behavior, and people do get excited when Paul starts talking about behavior. Is Paul going back to law? No. If it's not based on justification, otherwise you might think that your standing with God depends on you doing these things or you hearing and heeding Paul's expectations. But that is not true. So in this odd faith of ours, the only way you can behave yourself in the world is if you realize that nothing bad can happen to you between God and Christ, even if you misbehave. Misbehavior will not get you out of this evangel. That's not the message you're hearing in the Christian religion. And so, once again, it's another classic case of putting the cart where it does not belong. The horse is back there behind the cart wondering what's going on. Shouldn't I be in front of the cart instead of behind it? Yes, well, you should be, but you're not, because this is Christianity. And the emphasis is on your Christian walk. Ephesians, same way. Chapters 1 through 3, Paul doesn't care who you are. He's speaking of the glories of Christ. Same with Romans. Romans 1 through 11, Paul doesn't care who you are. He's talking about what Christ has done for you. He's talking about your present standing in Christ. Your behavior is the caboose following the engine of Christ's accomplishment. It's the cart your behavior is. It's the cart following the horse, the mighty steed of war, which is Christ conquering sin, death, and your misdeeds. Yes, he took all of your misdeeds to the cross. So again, the emphasis is teaching before behavior. Or as I like to put it, light before fruit. Now I'm going to go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. I told you that Paul uses the phrase new covenant. And I admit it's a difficult passage. We have to understand why Paul did this. Because it's so easy to think, oh, Paul's heralding the circumcision. He's talking about the new covenant of Israel. He's not. For one thing, again, there's a light face A here, not a dark face the. This is not the new covenant. This is a new covenant. Here it is. I'm going to show it to you on the car cam. Light face A. Everything's falling out of my Bible. Can you see that? I can't. Where is it? Yeah, it's a light face A, trust me. And it's not a literal covenant either. Paul ends his gospel. This is not a deal between you and Christ or you and God. So why is he saying a new covenant? He only says that in comparison to what the Gentiles knew of Israel's calling. And again, the Gentiles envied Israel and they wanted to be like Israel. And Paul is reminding them, Israel's is a ministry of stone, death, condemnation. Then Paul says this in verse 6. He says, well, we're competent dispensers of a new covenant, not of the letter. Of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter is killing, yet the Spirit is vivifying. The letter, and he's talking about the law chiseled in stone, is killing. Even for Israel, it's killing. So obviously, any Gentile, any person not of the natural tree of Israel, it's definitely going to be killing for them. Not only killing, but it's stupid. Because the law only came, listen to this, the law only came to one nation. People say to me, don't we have to obey the Ten Commandments? Why would you have to obey the Ten Commandments? Are you an Israelite? The law came only to one nation. Paul says in Romans chapter 2 that the nations who have no law nevertheless do the things of the law. That's a really great passage. I might be derailing my entire intention here by going to this, but this is verse 14 of Romans chapter 2. For whenever they of the nations that have no law by nature may be doing that which the law demands, these having no law, he emphasizes it. This is important. This is Paul like hammering something. Whenever it's mentioned, anything is mentioned twice in one passage, we're to pay close attention to it. Whenever they of the nations that have no law by nature may be doing that which the law demands, these having no law are a law to themselves, who are displaying the action of the law written in their hearts, their conscience testifying together, and their reckonings between one another. When God may be judging the hidden things of humanity according to my evangel. So once again, you could take this phrase, and many will, and misuse it. The nations are a law to themselves. Oh, does that mean the law of Moses? But no, it's the same thing as the new covenant in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. You could say, oh, Paul's using the word covenant here, so we must be under a covenant. He's using the word law here. The nations are a law unto themselves. He's relating it to the old law. We're a law unto ourselves. It's not a literal law any more than Paul's a competent dispenser of a new covenant. It's not a literal covenant. It's not a literal law. It's a new law that's not a law at all. The covenant of what God has done for humanity is not a covenant at all. It's a completely new thing that is only appreciated in relation to the old. How is it that the nations are doing that which the law demands? They do it because the action of the law is written in their hearts. God is giving them the Spirit. The Spirit of God is being given liberally to Greeks, to people to whom no law ever came. And the fruit of that Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, meekness, gentleness, and self-control. And against these things, there is no law. Because it was the stated purpose of the Ten Commandments, of the law of Moses, to produce these things, love, joy, peace, patience. But it needs to be demonstrated in the human race by God that no flesh at all can glory in God's presence. Oh, well, that's a shame. That's a pity, because everybody wants love, joy, peace, patience. How do we get these things if we don't get it from the law of Moses? We get it from the Spirit. But it had to be demonstrated that flesh and blood is useless. And it also had to be demonstrated that it cannot be imparted by obeying rules. It must be imparted by the Spirit of God. This makes us rely on the Spirit and not on rules. But again, this only becomes real to us by the comparison, by the contrast. So these people of the nations, they're suddenly loving one another. That's weird. Ampliotus over here, or Stachys, I used to hate these guys. They were morons. They cheated me in a business deal. But now all of a sudden I have a love for them. I have joy in my heart concerning them. And they might have wondered, how the heck did this happen? And if an Israelite had come along the scene and one of the Greeks said, I used to hate Ampliotus and Stachys. These are two of the Greeks mentioned in Romans chapter 16, but now I love them. The assumption of the Israelite would be, you must be adhering to the law. Congratulations, you're doing the law of Moses. You're living the law of Moses. And the man of the nations would say, the law of who? Some of them never had heard of Moses. Many of them had, some of them hadn't. The law never came to them. But that's the beauty of the thing, is that the law that on the surface purports to be bringing humanity to this wonderful place of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, was actually never designed to do that. What was designed to do it is the Spirit. And so these Greeks who have never had the law, they're suddenly outstripping Israel. They're suddenly outperforming Israel. They're suddenly doing all the things that the law was on its face said to be bringing about, and yet they're not doing it through law. They're doing it apart from law. They're doing it in spite of law. There's a new law. Now you see where that word's coming from. There's a new law. So the Greeks could say to the Jew, oh, we have a new law. A new law? What do you mean a new law? There's only one law, the law of Moses. No, we have a new law, and it's the law of the Spirit. And the Jew would not understand that at all, because the Jews aren't about spirit. They're about performing in the flesh. So these are the same people Paul's talking to in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. The letter is killing, the Spirit is vivifying. The Spirit is making you alive. Vivification means resurrection beyond the reach of death. It's being granted immortality. The Spirit that is in us, that we have now in measure, will eventually raise our bodies and make them not able to die again. That will be a good thing. But in the meantime, it is producing fruit in God's timing. And the fruit follows the Spirit. The fruit follows the Spirit. It follows the light. This is why Paul, for 11 chapters in Romans, never mentions you, except the fact that you're absolutely helpless. You're a worthless piece of inability, and this is a good thing, because now you're in a reclining mode of giving up in order to absorb what Paul is about to tell you about what Jesus Christ did for your sake. In Romans, Paul is shutting up all humanity. In chapters 1 and 2, he shuts up the world. In chapters 3 and 4, he shuts up the Jews. And then in chapter 3, he shuts up the Jews. And then he's able to, now that everybody is lying inert, Paul can now tell you what Christ has done. And he does that in Romans 3:21. Yet now, apart from law, a righteousness of God is manifest. Yet a righteousness of God through Jesus Christ's faith for all and on all who are believing. You know what people used to tell me with this verse? The letter is killing, yet the spirit is vivifying. 2 Corinthians 3:6. They told me that the letter was the scriptures. At any time, I would spend a lot of time studying, and I would dissect my scriptures. I would make notes. They say, Martin, you're just too cerebral. You're too analytical. The letter is killing, Martin. The letter is killing. And they would say that about the scriptures. The letter is killing, yet the spirit is giving life. This is one of the favorite pet phrases of the Pentecostal church. The letter kills. The letter kills. And they get it from 2 Corinthians 3:6. But what is Paul talking about? He's talking about, you are our letter engraven in our hearts. Engraven not with ink, but with the Spirit. Not on stone tablets. This is the letter not on stone tablets. So the letter of the context is that which was engraved on stone tablets. That's what's killing. The Ten Commandments are killing. Not the scriptures. These words I'm reading you from the Apostle Paul give us life. The farthest thing you can get from killing. The letter is to love Moses, not the scriptures. Sorry, Pentecostals. Not really. I'm not sorry about it. This needs to be said. Spirit is vivifying. Now, verse 7. Now, if the dispensation of death. Now, this is a definition of the Ten Commandments. And why anybody would read this and continue to tack up the Ten Commandments on the wall or demand that they be posted in government buildings, schools, churches, is beyond me. The dispensation of death, Paul calls it in verse 7. And in verse 9, he calls it a dispensation of condemnation. Dispensation of death? Dispensation of condemnation. Ooh, where can I sign up? That sounds good to me. It sounds good to them. Paul says that the dispensation of death by letters chiseled in stone, there again sets the context of what the letter is, letters chiseled in stone, if that came in glory, and it did, it came in a certain glory. There was a glory associated with God bringing the law from Mount Sinai to Moses. Because, as I told you yesterday, there's nothing wrong with the law. The law is pure, the law is holy, the law is righteous, the law is just. There's just this little minor problem, this little minor inconvenience that flesh and blood can't do it. Other than that, we're all fine. Now, if the dispensation of death by letters chiseled in stone came in glory, so that the sons of Israel were not able to look intently into the face of Moses because of the glory of his face, which was being nullified. That's the secret here. That glory is being nullified. And yet, there are those today, as there were back then, who seek always to resurrect it, to dig up those tablets of stone, to resurrect the Ten Commandments, to bring them back as a viable means to righteousness. This is a way that you can become righteous. But didn't Jesus say, do the commandments? He did. But it was the same as God saying it back at Mount Sinai. A human attempting it soon realizes his or her worthlessness and turns in desperation to Christ. For even in Israel, the law was an escort to bring people to a reliance on the Messiah. Who the reason he obeyed the law was because he would fulfill the law for Israel. And now even they are to place their hope in him. We have a much higher message. Paul is comparing it to the law of Moses. But again, this is important, and I'm repeating this from yesterday. But he is skipping the new covenant of Israel entirely. He is. He's skipping it entirely. He's not even alluding to it. He's not even alluding to God fulfilling the new covenant. Definite article, dark face type, the new covenant with Israel. Because Paul's not talking to Israelites. This is Paul to the Corinthians. They're from Corinth. They're from Greece. They're of the nations. And so they have no business looking into the things of Israel, except Paul is forced to do this because some of them are obsessed with Israelite things. I go on here. Moses had a certain glory. There was glory on the face of Moses when he came down from Mount Sinai. But that glory was being nullified. Paul says, how shall not rather, see, this is where the comparison comes in. How shall not rather the dispensation of the Spirit be in glory? How much greater is Spirit than stone? That's how much greater this call is to the call of Israel at Mount Sinai. For if the dispensation of condemnation is glory, and again, it had a certain glory, much rather, Paul uses that phrase again, the dispensation of righteousness is exceeding in glory. Key word, exceeding. For that also which has been glorified has not been glorified in this particular on account of the glory transcendent. Paul's the only one who uses this word transcendent. It's above and beyond. He calls the grace transcendent and he calls the glory transcendent. This is Paul's way of saying hop, skip, and jump. I said we hop, skip, and jump over Israel. Paul, instead of saying hop, skip, and jump, he uses one word, much more proficient here, much more streamlined, and that is transcendent. It's above and beyond. It skips over the entire New Covenant program with Israel. For Israel, even the Old Covenant is being nullified. For us, who would be tempted to partake in Israel's things, it's more than nullified. It's transcendently nullified. At the same time, it's transcendently glorified. For if that which is being nullified was nullified through glory, much rather that which is remaining remains in glory. I'll end with this. This is good. This is good. Wow. Not even the new covenant will be remaining. Not even the new covenant of Israel will be remaining. Paul says that this message of ours is remaining. And we have it now. This is good. Hang on a second. Hang on. In the 1,000 years, listen closely, 1,000 years, a limited period of time, God is going to fulfill what he began with Israel. It's called the new covenant. It's not a covenant at all. It's a figure of speech. But God is going to put the law, the same law of Moses, on their hearts. And the law will go forth from Zion. Micah 4:2. But that is going to end. As great as the new covenant ends, it's not remaining. As long as I'm getting excited. As great as the new covenant is, it's not remaining. It only lasts 1,000 years. Then what happens to the poor Israelites? They have to transfer to something else. So first they go from the old covenant, laboring under Moses. Then they get the new covenant. Yeah, that's great. Jesus Christ is on the earth. The law is going forth from Zion. We're the priesthood. The nations are bringing their treasures to us. That's fantastic. But what happens after 1,000 years is over? They have to learn something new. They have to give up their priesthood. The new covenant ends. But what we have now, we never have to transfer. We never have to pack our bags again. We don't have to move again. What Paul is bringing us is remaining. It starts from the very beginning. It remains. From the very beginning, it's aeonian. It goes not only through Eon 4, but through Eon 5, all the way up to the consummation. Israel keeps having to pack their bags. They did that even in the wilderness. They kept moving their tents. They watched the glory cloud. They watched the fire, a pillar of fire at night, and they moved. They went from Moses. Then they had to go to Jesus Christ. Then they go from the old covenant to the new covenant. And then what happened? Even the new covenant gets pulled out from under them at the end of the 1,000 years. But we don't have to pack our suitcases. We're settled. We're on a foundation that doesn't change. Paul says it's remaining. It remains in glory. It begins in glory and it remains in glory. Oh, that's good.